and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zara Popinski. So today I'm excited to welcome Claire Hanscombe to the podcast. She's the author of the new novel Unscripted, about a young woman with a celebrity crush and a determined plan. She's also the host of the BritLit podcast, a regular contributor at Book Riot, and editor of Walk With Us, How the West Wing Changed Our Lives. Claire, welcome to A Bookish Home.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm so excited to chat with you. The book is completely delightful. It was such a treat to read. I sort of devoured it in a day and did that thing where you sort of plop it down at the end, upset that it's over. So it was a lovely day to get to spend with these characters. So for people who haven't gotten to read it yet, tell us a bit about Unscripted.
Yeah, so you summed it up pretty well, but Unscripted is the story of Libby, who has a celebrity crush on an American actor called Tom, or Tom, I guess, as he would be known over here. She has this plan. She's going to write a novel and she's going to somehow find a way to get the novel to him, and he's going to offer to write the screenplay with her. And yeah, and she's going to pretend to think about it. But obviously that was her plan all along, and they're going to fall in love. That is her plan. I'm not going to tell you whether that happens or not, because that's kind of the point of the book. But she does meet him. So, you know, don't think you're going to read a whole book and then she's never even going to meet him, because that would not be a great, well, maybe it would be a good story, but it's not the story I wanted to write.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if it's like the heaviness and the news around us or what, but I've just been loving sort of escaping into this kind of book lately. And I would say for listeners who enjoy Josie Silver's One Day in December, and I know you interviewed her, they would enjoy this. I also kept thinking it had, the story was very different, but it had a lot of the same feel as One Day by David Nichols, which I love. Is this the kind of book you've been a big fan of as a reader and wanted to write, or how did picking this idea for your novel sort of come to be and diving in?
Well, actually, that's a huge compliment you just paid me, because I loved One Day in December, and One Day is one of my favorite all-time favorite books.
Me too.
So yeah, it probably did influence me a little, or maybe the reason I love it is because the themes in it were already resonating with me. One Day has two characters who know each other from university and have this kind of on-off friendship / relationship / are they ever going to be together thing happening. But the woman in the book, I think, is a writer at one point, or at least she's very into books and reading.
She is, yeah. And actually, you know what? She teaches too. So I think that was part of it.
Yes,
too,
and she teaches
about
too.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does for a bit. And I know that when I read it, I really resonated with her, partly because she had this degree and didn't know what she was going to do with her life, and just kind of found herself floundering a little. And that was very much where I was at that point in my life. That aspect isn't so present in my book, but the whole aspect of a university friendship and the importance of the formative years at university was definitely a huge part of Unscripted. So yeah, possibly it did influence me. I love those books. I love books about friendships, about groups of friends, about, I love the slow burn of a romance. I don't know whether you've watched The West Wing, but there's a Josh and Donna romance.
Oh, yes.
/ will and they, won't they? Yes.
And we have to have a whole conversation about that too. Yeah, I definitely love, I think that is one of the things I really enjoyed, the dynamic of Libby and her friend from college, Dan, but also their group. They all meet at university, and it's not sort of a picture perfect, idealistic look at this group of friends. And even Libby herself plays sort of an interesting role in that group. It is not, certainly not painted as a saint in any way. Could you sort of talk about their dynamics? I just thought it was an interesting sort of mix of characters, and Libby's role was sort of an interesting part of it.
Yeah, so when I went to Cambridge as well, as Libby did, and I have a wonderful group of friends from Cambridge who I'm still friends with now. They're among some of my closest and dearest friends, even though I live in the US and they live in the UK, so I don't see them much, but when I see them, it's, you know, aside from the fact our lives have changed, it's as if no time has passed. The characters aren't based, each character isn't based on each friend of mine, but the general feeling of getting to Cambridge and finding your people is definitely part of it. Libby, like me, went to a school where it wasn't cool to be smart or to work hard. But then when you go to Cambridge and you find this group of people who did work hard and who often really love their subject, that's such a huge breath of fresh air. And I think it bonds you anyway, because you're at the stage of life where, you know, everything is new and different and exciting and you think you're grown up. And so you get bonded to these people. And yeah, and I think I'm a Christian and a lot of my friends aren't. And I spent a lot of my time at Cambridge gently trying to evangelize them. Maybe not so gently, maybe they wouldn't say gently. I have really good friends, but I wonder if there was a bit of eye rolling behind my back. Who knows? I mean, I never sensed that from them. And Libby's friends also eye roll at her behind her back, but also in love and in playfulness. But, you know, she has this crush on this actor and this crazy dream of going to America, and they kind of think she's crazy, but they also love her and they want to support her. And I think that aspect was definitely part of my experience at Cambridge and beyond. So yeah, I think that's where the inspiration for that came from.
Yeah, it's so realistic and relatable. They sort of have just so much shared history and, you know, those little resentments here and there that have festered. And but I'm interested. I had wondered if you had really gone to Cambridge, like the character. There's a part where she's talking about Cambridge as sort of this like fantastical, magical place. And she's so excited to sort of go into this world, and all the descriptions just resonated with me so much. I did not go to Cambridge, but I did spend my junior year at Oxford. And just that idea of it does just feel so magical. And there's a sense of awe that I think came through in her talking about it, that she's in these buildings that had housed all these great scholars, and it's such a privilege to be there. So I did love that part of her character, that she did have such a sort of reverence for getting to be there. But so you mentioned her celebrity crush, and as I was reading, I was thinking about the West Wing and had sort of been thinking, is this Josh? Is this Josh and Donna that we're referring to? And I was curious how much, was based on, now that I've sort of looked, you know, more and have seen, that you are a big West Wing fan, I'm kind of curious how that came into the idea for the book.
Yeah. So I could be disingenuous and pretend that, you know, it's just total coincidence, but anyone who's ever looked me up online will see in 2 seconds that I have what could be described as a celebrity crush on Bradley Whitford, who played Josh Lyman in The West Wing.
I mean, who doesn't, really?
Who doesn't, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I once got to have lunch with him, which was pretty amazing. So yeah, there's a scene in the book, the scene in fact where Libby meets Tom, which I don't think is a huge spoiler, because as I said, there wouldn't be much of a story if she didn't meet him. She meets him at Cambridge, and that's very similar to something that happened to me. I got to meet Bradley Whitford at Cambridge, actually. And I did give him a novel of mine, but I don't think he read it. So there ends that story.
It could have come to life. But did you also, so I did get to read, you had written an article about your love of the West Wing. And did that inspire your move to the US?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm totally here because of the West Wing. I had never even really wanted to visit the US, but I have a childhood friend who lived in New York, and we had recently reconnected. This was in the sort of 2007 and 8 kind of time. And so I said, oh, actually, I do want to come and visit you. Can I come? And this was after I started watching The West Wing and realized, actually, oh, maybe America's not what I had stereotyped in my head, because The West Wing definitely showed me a different side of America and a different side of how to think about the country and American history and American values. It's a very idealistic show for those who haven't watched it. And, you know, they talk a lot about, there's this soaring music and they talk in lovely, eloquent terms about the values of America and freedom and, you know, all this stuff. And so it really made me curious and made me want to come and visit. And so I visited my friend in New York and she asked me if I wanted to visit anywhere else. And I said, well, how far is DC? Can we go? And so we did. And we visited DC and it was nighttime when we got to DC and her relatives had picked us up and were driving us around in the dark with the lit up monuments. And it looked exactly like the show. And I was just totally fell in love with it. And then we spent a few days in town and I totally fell in love with the town, with the city. And yeah, ended up applying for an MFA in creative writing to because I was also writing because of the West Wing as well. So I applied for an MFA in DC and I didn't get in the first time, but I applied again, got in. So I moved here. But yeah, it was because of the West Wing.
Well, it's, you know, obviously such a parallel in the book with Libby. She's inspired to go into teaching because the book version of the West Wing is the classroom. That has shaped her life so much. And then of course, I don't know if it's the writing that so much inspires her or just wanting to, the writing of the West Wing that inspires her, or of just sort of wanting to write the novel to hopefully, get to meet the celebrity crush. But either way, it has such a huge impact on her life. And I was curious as I was reading, so because there's so many parallels, was it confusing at times to sort of be, so Libby is writing a novel within the novel that is very similar to the book that you're writing. Was it a bit tricky sometimes to wrap your head around sort of the different layers?
I don't know. I think I'm so used to thinking about writing and writing about writing. And at the time of writing it, I was doing my MFA. So I was in that world and used to using all kinds of vocabulary like authorial intrusion, which I don't think I've said in 4 years, but things like that, which I think that phrase comes up in the novel. And so I was very used to talking and thinking about writing. I don't know how deep to go into this, but the novel that I gave Bradley Whitford was the first novel I wrote. And I did daydream about writing a script with him. And so this novel, Unscripted, was kind of inspired by that. So I guess I had in my head been living some of what Libby lives. So that made it less confusing to write about. Yeah.
So then what made you change sort of the first novel into the second novel or decide to put the first novel down?
Well, I worked on the first novel for, I think, a couple of years and I worked really hard on it and I was learning the craft of writing as I did it and reading lots of books about the craft of writing. But it was my first novel and it possibly wasn't as good as it would be now. Well, it hopefully isn't as good as it would be now if I wrote it now. It was also a bit weird and a bit ambitious because I was writing about DC, but this was before I lived here. And I was also kind of setting it in the future in the political world, not really having any idea of what would happen in between in the political world. So I've put it aside. One day I might revisit it. It was also quite, there was probably a bit too much fan fiction type stuff because it was so inspired by the West Wing. Whereas now, having lived in DC, I could probably have a go at writing something similar with a bit more of a actual reality infused in it rather than me riffing off a show, which itself is fiction. So,
right. Yeah. I see. So it had a very different premise than,
yes.
Than this one. Well, I mean, the other thing I kept thinking as I was reading, and I know you mentioned wanting to turn the first novel into a screenplay, but this book just seems to be screaming to be turned into a movie. And it is one that I would love to see. Is that something you're thinking about at all? I hope.
I mean, it's something I'm dreaming about for sure. And you're not the first person to say that. A few people have said that. I mean, whether that's partly because it talks about books being made into movies, so people are thinking about that anyway. I mean, that would be kind of amazing. Yeah, and I don't know anything at all about the process of how that happens in terms of, I know that you can get plucked from obscurity. That obviously is the main dream, but there are other ways that you can pitch and, you know, you can even write, I could even write my own screenplay based on it. And that's something that I would think about in the future, but at the moment, it's not what I'm focused on. Mm-hmm. But who knows?
Yeah, one thing at a time, I guess. But yeah, it would be, yeah, it would be a very... very fun movie to get to go see. Well, so Libby does try to sort of strike up her own writing routine, writing the novel. And it got me curious. I always love to hear about authors and their own writing routine and sort of what the process was like for you in this book, how long it took you. And if you're someone who, you know, has to write at a certain time every day or kind of what your routine is.
Yeah, so it's different for every book. And I've done NaNoWriMo a few times, National Novel Writing Month. But this one, I wrote mostly in the summers of my MFA after my first year and my second year. I did an MFA because I was told / sold that an MFA would give you more time to write. Because that's supposedly all you're doing while you're studying. But the program that I ended up on was not the case, partly because they insisted that we did classes on literature, but not literature from a writer's point of view, but from a reader's point of view. So we ended up having to write critical papers as if we were doing a master's in literature, which is not at all what I'd signed up for. So I didn't end up having a ton of time to actually write during the year, because we also had internships and things like that. So then in the summers, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do this thing that I came here to do. So the summer of my first year, so that would have been 2013, I started writing it then. And what I would do is it was the morning, although I'm a late person. So we'll define morning as anything before lunch, and lunch can be at like 2. So, you know, generous interpretation. But, you know, I tend to get up, have a cup of tea, and then I have breakfast, make coffee, and then it's with the coffee that I start to write. So that's kind of my general thing. And then I would make myself write about 500 words. And then at the 500 word ish mark, I would either be in the flow and keep going, or I would be clearly not in the flow, but at least I'd tried, or I'd written a good 500 words and those were going to be part of the book. So I would sit down and write. I handwrite my first draft usually. So I was handwriting this. So it was about, I knew how much what 500 words looked like on the page. It was about 3 pages. So that's what I would do most days. And then I am someone whose first drafts tend to be shorter than they need to be. A lot of people overwrite and then have to cull stuff, whereas I tend to get the basics down and then have to revisit and sort of flesh out the characters and add backstory and things like that. Which is what I did the second summer. So 2014, I think I followed much the same pattern. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, similar to that.
That's interesting that you handwrite it. Do you edit on the handwritten version, or do you type it all up first and then dive into the revision stage?
I type it up, and as I'm typing it up, I'm editing it a bit, changing things around and things like that. And then, but then there are multiple rounds of edits after that. And then I tend to edit I then print out the typed up version and edit in pen on that. So yeah, it's not very environmentally friendly, but I tend to need the physical. And maybe it's because I'm older and I'm of the generation where when I started writing my first poems and all that, it was all by hand and things like that. But yeah, I tend to need the physical thing. It's also away from distractions. I can close my computer. Facebook isn't there. I often will actually switch off my internet router and just like not have the internet available, because otherwise it's just a disaster. So yeah.
It would be much, much less distracting. And there's something too, I feel like, about handwriting sometimes where it feels a little freer or less, I don't know. And maybe I'm also less likely to like highlight a whole section and hit delete. So yeah. That can probably be helpful too. Well, I know you have your podcast and you write for Book Riot as well. And obviously you're an author, but have you been a big reader your whole life?
I read quite a lot as a child, I think, and definitely as a teenager. And then in my 20s, I sort of forgot that I liked to read. I think life just got so busy. And I read a lot of nonfiction, Christian nonfiction in my 20s, and tended to read the same books over and over again to like try and get the truth of them into me, basically. But then I was having a really rough time, probably about a decade ago. I had depression and I was going home for Christmas, which is never the easiest thing in my family, as it can be in many families. And a friend of mine who I'd been with just marched me to the library and said, what you need is a good book. And she took me to the library and she was like, this one's good, this one's good, this one's good. And just like handed me a pile of books. One of them was The Lost Art of Keeping Secrets by Eva Rice, which I've since heard is a bit of a cult favorite. I had never heard of it at the time. Well, I'd also been out of the book world for a long time. So yeah, she handed me this pile of books and I went home that Christmas and read them all. And I was like, oh yeah, I do like reading. And so from there, and then I started to write. And when I started to write, I read, as I mentioned, a lot of books on the craft of writing, which then themselves tend to say, oh, this classic book does dialogue really well, or this modern book does description really well. So then I was inspired to read books that were recommended to me from the books about writing, if that makes sense.
For sure. And I love that friend. And I feel like some people would be turned off and might think that that is a little bit bossy. And I love it. Like, here's a bunch of books that you might enjoy. And look at that impact that had, that really, yeah, really helped turn you back on to reading. And I've been really enjoying listening to the podcast. And we've had some great authors on there as well. So I'm sure that's been a great way. I know for me, it's such a great way to sort of enhance your reading life, to actually be getting to talk to the authors who wrote the books that you are liking to read.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's wonderful. I mean, it's the best thing about the podcast. And when I started it, I went straight to the authors whose books I had already read and loved, and who I often tell authors on Twitter when I love their books. So they already knew me. I wasn't some random stranger. I was like, you know how I'm always talking about your book? Well, so yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, I always like to end by asking guests what they have been reading lately. Do you have any book recommendations you'd be able to share?
Yeah, so I was actually going to mention One Day in December. I loved that book.
Yes, I did too.
But also, my most recent interview was with the author of a book called The Hunting Party. And you said that you mentioned that it enhances your reading life when you do a podcast. And one way that it has for me is that I've sort of pushed beyond the boundaries of what I'm necessarily comfortable reading. I'm not a big thriller reader, for example, but I did read a thriller last year that I really loved called Anatomy of a Scandal, which weirdly, if you like unscripted, you might like Anatomy of a Scandal for completely different reasons. But she, one of the characters went to Oxford, and so there's some of the reminiscing and stuff is in that book too.
Although I always love that.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't have as positive an experience as Libby did and as I did, but there's that stuff is in there. But the main plot is about an MP, so a member of parliament, gets accused of raping one of his staff, and it's from the point of view of the barrister who is prosecuting him, and also from the point of view of his wife. And it's just a really well written, really well told story, and obviously incredibly important. So that was something that the podcast sort of, because I had seen that book on my Twitter feed so much, I was like, okay, I have to read this. And then another book I was going to mention, The Hunting Party, again, thriller, murder, not my thing really, but it was all over my Twitter feed, and publicists generally are more amenable to sending you the book and getting their person on the podcast if it's a big book that they're really pushing. And it did sound good because, it was about a group of friends. So it's about a group of friends from university who go away one New Year's Eve, and one of them doesn't survive the trip. And we don't know who dies or who kills them until the end. And it's just a really wonderfully creepy book. It's sort of a literary thriller, so it's more in my wheelhouse than a straight thriller would be. And of course, the friendship aspect is really interesting to me. So yeah, I read that, and it was kind of, it's set in the Scottish Highlands and it's snowing, and I read it sort of curled up in my sofa watching the snow fall. So that was great.
I listened to that episode and that was sort of what drew me in too. I was like, well, I'm not normally a thriller person, but the whole dynamic of it's this group of college friends and that you're sort of going to have to figure out who amongst them was killed and all of that. That friendship angle sounded really interesting. So that's on my to be read list now. So thank you for that.
Great. I've done my job then.
Yes. Was there one other you were, I interrupted you. Was there another one?
No, it's fine. Well, I mean, I could talk about books forever. So, I listened to at the time of taping this, your most recent episode with Meg Medina, where she talked about Michelle Obama's book Becoming. I read that too, just before Christmas, and, it was really wonderful and really interesting. There was just so much about her life that I didn't really know about. So that was, that was wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I was sort of wondering, because it had gotten so much hype, if I was going to pick it up and be underwhelmed, but it really it exceeded my expectations, and she got I feel like she delved into more than I expected.
Yes, definitely.
For sure. Well, Claire, where can listeners find you online and find out more about the book?
So all the information about the book is at unscriptednovel.com. Easier to spell than my name, which people often don't get right the first few times. unscriptednovel.com. And I am at Bookish Claire on Twitter and on Litzy, if any of your guests are on that, any of your listeners are on that. That's pretty. And the BritLit podcast has its own feed on Twitter, which is BritLit podcast, and its own Instagram, which is BritLit podcast as well.
Great. Well, I will link to those and to any books that we mentioned. And thanks for coming on and chatting about the book. Again, I really loved it, and would love to see a sequel, a movie.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I would love all those things too. So who knows? Yes.
All right. Thanks, Claire.
Thanks.
I hope you head to your local library or bookstore to pick up a copy of Unscripted. And if you're looking for more book recommendations or links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to abookishhome.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to rate and review in iTunes. It would be so helpful. And you can also follow A Bookish Home Happenings on Twitter and Instagram at A Bookish Home. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.